Hey, it's L.A. Lloyd, and today on Promotion Man, Fred Myers and I talk about fashion. Which rock star got bell-bottoms into the mainstream in the 70s? David Bowie, the epitome of fashion. Punk rockers wearing safety pins and torn shirts. MTV, the channel that defined 80s fashion. Madonna creates a look and style on her own. Hip-hop and sports fashion work together. And how tight was Dwight Yoakam's jeans? And we wrap with a tale of two Billies, Eilish and Corgan, on Promotion Man.
You know, music is interesting, and the culture of music is interesting because it affects so many fibers of society. It affects politics, because if you look back on the 60s and all the protests and demonstrations for the Vietnam War, and quite frankly, it was affecting people at that age group from 16 to 25, because either if they weren't getting draft notices, their brothers were, right, or their, you know, or their cousins or whomever. But it also affected fashion, because even when you look at the 60s and you start looking at some of these documentaries like Woodstock, and, you know, I'd love to know when the peace sign, like who invented the peace sign,
right?
You know, because I love that symbol. I actually have a peace sign on the back of my car.
Maybe we could turn that over to someone listening today that could give us a history. I'm sure they could.
Yeah. But when you look at the 60s, here came flower power.
Right.
And there were shows that were spinning off on TV that, you know, would capitalize on what was going on. But it was fashion. It was politics. It was art. Because Andy Warhol and Peter Max and all these vibrant colors and vibrant artists of their own era.
And if you want to see someone who really just, I mean, he completely created that era in a movie, is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood from 1969. I mean, Quentin Tarantino has just, you see everything. I mean, he's got the buildings, the cars, the clothing, just everything.
I haven't even seen it.
It is so perfect.
I heard it's a great movie.
I mean, he just literally, it was kind of a love letter from him to Hollywood, 1969. It's so well done.
Well, and there you go. Even Hollywood. I mean, it affected everything. So if we look at this theme of Promotion Man, it's clearly music, but we're also looking at how it did affect, like, fashion. So I have to tell you this story. I was hitchhiking around the country. I had to get out of Detroit. And I tried to convince the guys in my band that we should go have an adventure and pile our money together and go out west. Just go anywhere, Colorado, California, just leave Detroit.
Yeah.
And some people struggle with what would be considered risk. And my two buddies just said they wanted to, and they were all hyped up, and I'm a good instigator. But I couldn't instigate them across the goal line, and they left me in the dust. And one day they said, you know, no, we're not going to do this. So I literally took my $700 and converted it into $100 money orders. And I said to my mom, when I write you a letter or call you on the phone, I'm pacing my money because I don't want to lose it on this trip, because I don't even know where I'm going, much less what's going to happen to me. And I was smart enough to know that you don't want to hitchhike anywhere near Detroit or Chicago. And my goal was to just get to Denver.
Yeah.
So I took a train from Detroit to Chicago and then another train from Chicago to Denver. And the most interesting thing about my train ride in Chicago was, just picture a kid with the hippest patch jeans you could ever want. Because I remember on this podcast, I had said to everybody that I worked in this men's clothing store. Well, the tailor took a real liking to me, and he was this German immigrant, and I'm German, so that, I guess, was our bond.
Right.
So he used to take my bell-bottom blue jeans, and I would ask him to take all the pieces of leather and velvet. And so I had the most amazing set of patch jeans that were tailored correctly with a
So where did you get that? I mean, because one thing I was going to bring up when you started talking about clothing is bell-bottoms. I mean, to me, you know, the 70s just was bell-bottoms, and the shows you were talking about that inspired, like the Partridge Family. I mean, they had the look, they had those jeans you were talking about, but who as a rock star do you think really brought that scene the most into the mainstream?
I think the Rolling Stones, for sure.
Yeah.
I think Led Zeppelin, because, you know, when I got my Led Zeppelin II album, that just was like a coming of age for me, because I was raised to admire the Beatles at 9.
Right.
But now when I'm 14, 15, and I'm in a garage band, we're playing Grand Funk a lot. We're playing Alice Cooper songs a lot. We're playing MC5, Kick Out the Jams, Motherfuckers, right, when they first, you know, brought it out. But when Led Zeppelin came, and all of those guys, that's what I'm saying about this topic, is all of a sudden they brought fashion into the scene.
And think about David Bowie, who even had a song called Fashion. I mean, and David Bowie and was David the epitome.
Bowie,
I mean,
oh my
he was
gosh.
In a league of his own, you know?
Totally a league of his own till the day he died.
Yeah.
Because talk about a pioneer. In all, I was really lucky to be in Chicago when they had a David Bowie show in a museum,
mm-hmm,
and it was the Fine Arts Museum in Chicago, and it was amazing because they had all his artifacts and all that.
Wow.
So I'm on this train with this ridiculously hip pair of patch jeans.
Yeah,
I literally have a legitimate Woodstock t-shirt that I lost, but it was like from the concert.
Right.
My hair's super long, and I had a dime bag of weed behind my ear, and my hair was so bushy no one would know it's stuffed in there. And I'm looking down the aisle of this train, and here comes this guy walking down the aisle, and he caught my attention because he was like stark black and white. His pants were black, his shirt was white, his blazer was black. And he was carrying in his hand this rimmed hat. He's Amish.
Okay.
He's coming from Pennsylvania.
Wow.
He sits down next to me. He's 18. I'm 18. We're completely worlds apart.
That's crazy.
In society.
Yeah.
And we're both going to Denver. He's going to live with his uncle in Boulder. And, of course, Boulder's a college town where they have all kinds of crazy drugs. And God knows what happened to him.
No doubt.
And I was on my way to hitchhike, but I was smart enough to hitchhike out of Denver, not, you know. So my point is that the music thing affected your fashion with certainly long hair. Beatles brought long hair, period. You know, they were the ones, them and the Stones, and it was very shocking that it went over your ear.
Yeah, right. I remember that.
And now at this point, mine's like, you know, my shoulders, because we're the pioneers of long hair. Then you look at the history of the new wave and punk. So all of a sudden, safety pins are becoming a fashion
torn
statement.
Torn t-shirts with safety pins.
Yeah, and then torn shirts and torn jeans. And then here comes the Ramones with their blue jeans and their black motorcycle jackets.
Yeah.
And then the punk movement with the Sex Pistols and the Cramps and all of those bands that were really kind of pushing the limit of fashion.
And then all of a sudden, a little thing that we discussed here on earlier podcasts came to be and completely immersed the two together, and that was MTV.
That was MTV.
And that was the whole thing, because the great thing I remember about MTV is I was telling my daughter about this last night, because she started listening to Time Clock of the Heart by Culture Club. And she's asking me history of Culture Club. And I was like, you wouldn't believe how many girls used to come dressed as Boy George at his concert wearing the hat. Or if you went to a Madonna show and all the girls who had the rubber bracelets and the bows in their hair.
I'm glad you brought up Madonna, because I think if anybody, Madonna, because of how powerful she became. And she was broke.
Yeah.
And I had said that we're going to have a guest on the show. His name is Ken Kushnick.
Yeah.
And he was with Sire. And he's going to tell us all about how they had signed her and all the other really big Sire bands that he was a part of. But she was broke. She was dead broke. And her fashion was literally what she scraped together, you know, to make happen. And then when you look at like Boy George, he was another one that was incredibly iconic for
Cyndi Lauper.
Cyndi Lauper, there's another one who was probably the first one to put dye in her hair.
Right.
You know?
Or even, you know, the bands that maybe one hit wonders. I mean, it just had a unique look in the 80s, like the Romantics, you know, where all the guys
Flock
were.
Seagulls.
Flock of Seagulls. I mean, created that haircut.
That haircut.
You know?
Haircut 100. I mean, so many. So that's, I think it's a fun topic, because when you look back on all of these different bands, from the hippie movement of the 60s to the punk rock movement of the early and late 70s to the Flock of Seagulls and Madonna's, and then,
and
of
Prince,
course, MTV, and then Prince, of course. Yeah, because let's talk about MTV. All of a sudden now, you have a visual to the audio.
Yeah.
You know, and we could do a whole episode on MTV, and we will. But just from a fashion standpoint, all of a sudden, all the kids in America have a visual, the way American Bandstand was a visual.
Right, right.
And the rock show Midnight, what was that show?
Don Kirshner's rock concert was one, but then Don there was the Midnight Special with Wolfman Jack.
Yeah, and Don Kirshner's rock concert, you know, that. And so, and then Dick Clark's American Bandstand.
And we can't forget Soul Train.
I love Soul Train.
Hey, I mean, look, they definitely created a look themselves. I mean, the style that those bands like the Temptations and the Four Tops, you know, all wearing the same clothes, you know, again, it was, you know, no matter what genre you were in, as you said, music definitely affected style and clothing.
No, you know, no question about it. And I think all the listeners are probably laughing to themselves on some of the clothes that they had worn. Hey, all we had to do is look at photographs of ourselves, because I didn't mean to have a mullet, but somehow it turned into a mullet.
I mean, that's what I was going to say. Not only clothing, but, you know, beards, hairstyles, you know, mohawks. I mean,
mohawks.
You know, like I said, that was a big thing.
That was a big thing.
So, I mean, a lot of people emulated their folks. Michael Jackson, of course, when he came on the scene as the first kind of black artist to ever get played on MTV. And then he's coming out there with the white glove, you know, and then he does the moonwalk for the first time on the Motown anniversary show, which kind of pissed off a lot of people because Michael was signed to Epic at that time.
Yeah, he was signed to Epic.
So, yeah, here is another one who just created these looks. And again, it was all about when you go to their concert, you'd have hundreds, if not thousands, of people dressed up like their favorite rock star.
So who do we blame for the man bun?
Not that, I don't know.
Because somebody needs to be held accountable for that.
It's just a modern day mullet, man. It's just a modern day mullet.
I don't see it. You know, I'm as liberal as they come, and I don't get it.
Yeah.
But hey, it's not me.
I saw a guy who had a little hat for his man bun at ACL Music Fest one year. Had a little thing strapped on with a rubber band. It was a little top hat on his man bun.
Well, that's so funny because as we do these podcasts and I get to review all these bands I was with, I look at the Van Halen pictures of David Lee Roth, and him and Eddie had the same kind of patch jeans that I had. I really wish I would have kept those jeans.
How about the unitard, though? Did he get that from Freddie Mercury or where? I mean, because, you know, David would pop out with a unitard occasionally, you know, with his chest open, but still, he'd have the straps on.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's just it. Once you start getting to a level where the show business clothing, I mean, look at all the country bands that had all the glittered like sport coats.
Just glitter, period.
Yeah. But it's fun to review all of that, and I encourage everybody to go into our promotion-man.com website because we try to upload as many photos as we can to reflect our stories and of course, you know, reflect some of the era of our time.
And you've done a great job. You've really pulled out some stuff that as long as I've known you, I haven't ever seen before. I was like, wow, this is so great, and it's just going perfectly with our stories here on the podcast.
Yeah, it has. So I think we've probably covered some good ground on the fashion aspect. Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to?
I don't think so. I mean, like there? I said, I just think, you know, even when you just mentioned country, again, doesn't really matter what genre you're in, but I mean, those like Loretta Lynn and Tammy Wynette had the high, you know, beehive hairstyles and the long flowing dresses, but I mean, it just was reflective of the music and the genre that they were actually in.
And that reminds me of a guy that I didn't get a chance to work with because when I left Warner Brothers, they had just signed K.D. Lang, and then they just signed that guy. He was the country guy that was real thin, and why can't I remember his name? He ended up being a movie star, or he was in quite a few.
Dwight Yoakam. Okay.
So, like, look at Dwight's groove.
Right.
I mean, he really had a great looking groove.
Yeah, he did.
His jeans couldn't have been any tighter.
Now, I tried to emulate those jeans a few times. I would have to lay on the ground on my back and pull them up, and then I'd kind of have to squat to stretch them a little bit to get them up. But I kind of went through that tight jean phase myself.
And, you know, I never mentioned in all these podcasts that I actually had to bag country, too. And I had no business promoting country music because I had no idea what I was doing. So what I would do is go to my country guys and they would tell me what they were going to add because I had no clue because we had a bunch of artists. But I have to be honest, Dwight Yoakam gave me the ability to put my guard down a little bit and go, hold on a minute, because he really was a pretty cool guy with a pretty cool look. And I really liked his songs and the way he delivered them.
Because he was traditional. He sounded like, you know, Buck Owens, where, of course, he's from Bakersfield and had that whole Bakersfield sound. He's even recorded with Buck before Buck passed away. So, yeah, total admiration for him. He knew how to wear the cowboy hat. And as we saw that we always knew, he probably was losing his hair and he played the character in Sling Blade.
Billy Bob Thornton.
I mean, and you talk about a guy who goes from this swagger, the cowboy hat, the tight jeans, into this asshole in Sling Blade. I was like, dude, that was so great. And he let his guard down. And I think that's why he really looked like an amazing actor, because I think that might have been his first acting role.
I think, and he was brilliant.
He was great at
it. He was absolutely brilliant.
You know, Fred, one other genre I wanted to bring up that really has affected fashion, especially with the African-American community, is first of all, hip-hop, you know, going back to Run DMC, Grandmaster Flash, you know, Kool Moe Dee, some of those guys earlier, which eventually became, you know,
LL Cool J.
Then, of course, you know, the NWA movement comes out, and you see a lot of guys wearing the sports colors, where, you know, the music and their favorite teams are starting to become a part of the fashion. It could be anything from sneakers to, you know, baseball caps to jackets or whatever, but you started to see a lot of the fashion that was associated with maybe where that band may be from and the team associated there. Like the Oakland Raiders was huge. The LA Raiders when the Raiders were there back in the day. So I think hip hop is another one that has highly influenced fashion as well.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you touched on sneakers, but look at what they did for Nike.
Yeah.
I mean, look at what the sneaker world, I mean, because now for people to have a collection of hard to get Nike, you know, shoes.
Right.
And then, the sports figures are totally into them now.
And Run DMC, I mean, that was their whole thing, you know, was Adidas. You know, they had the white Adidas with the black stripes, which is now come back, and you see all the kids wearing these shoes that Run DMC was wearing back in the early to mid 80s. So it's and you'll see a lot of fashion, which another thing is, I see a lot of 70s wear right now that my daughters, who are both teenagers, you know, literally do that. Or my youngest daughter looked like she walked out of a Nirvana video the other day.
Let's talk about that.
We forgot grunge.
I mean, look at how Seattle in their rainy weather brought out the flannel.
Right, that's right.
Because obviously Portland and Seattle's known for rain and drizzle.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden you have the grunge movement, where it's completely opposite of what had been going down with rock and roll.
Well, let's backtrack just a little bit, because we got to talk about the hair bands. Because think about, you know, once you started getting the big teased hair from,
like Rat?
Well, like Rat kind of started it, but Motley Crue. I mean, if you've seen The Dirt, I mean, you see the guys, they tease their hair, and they put on, as one of the guys
Aquanet.
Said in the movie, put on Aquanet and wears more makeup than his girlfriend. I mean, and so, you know, that kind of spawns something. But then one day, Smells Like Teen Spirit comes about, hair bands are gone off the map. And like you said, we start seeing people wearing Doc Martens and flannel. And
oh my gosh, Doc Martens.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a whole nother movement.
Right.
There's a great book out, it's called The Tipping Point.
Okay.
And it was a great book because it was talked about a product, which could be anything, really. And how do you get the product up the mountain and then tip it over to where the mass public embraces it? And somebody accidentally wore Doc Martens down a fashion runway aisle.
Okay.
And it's all it took. It was like, it was just that one scenario where that little spark leads to that flame that leads to that fire of what it does.
What is that going to take for us to do that for promotion, man?
Yeah. Five-star reviews.
Five-star reviews. Give us your five-star reviews.
So what? So I want to bring up Billie Eilish. Because even
Billie Eilish.
All right. So I was going to say, even though I'm older.
Yeah. I know her because I've got teenage daughters.
Yeah, but see, I love her.
Yeah,
I totally love her. I think she's the freshest thing out right now. in my opinion. I mean, there's a lot of different things out there, and I try to keep up with it. And I still have buddies of mine that run some of the big record companies today. But Billie Eilish, I love her groove. I love her attitude. She's now a fashion icon in her own way.
Absolutely.
And I think she's going about it in an interesting way because she's a very pretty girl. And she's downplaying that whole thing with these baggy clothes right. and her whole little groove. And I find it so refreshing that a girl at her age who's hooked in with her brother, so they've got a relationship there,
yeah.
and he's helping with all the music production, have got something really going on. Yeah. Duh.
And I tell you, the funny thing about it is my daughter told me about Billie about 2 years ago before she really got big, and she was doing kind of a club tour, and she did come through Austin where we're based here with Promotion Man and played a club called Emo's. This show sold out the day it went on sale, so I didn't know who Billie Eilish was. I was like, well, she said, Dad, can you get me tickets for this show? I was like, I don't know. So I asked one of my co-program directors here. And she's like, yeah, I've got a couple tickets, but we don't know what to do with her. You know, nobody at the record label knows what to do with her. So you can have my two tickets. And I'm telling you, I go to this show, and I've been to a lot of shows at Emo's of all genres. I've never seen a line wrapped around the building as far as this one was for Billie Eilish. This was 2 years ago. So the kids who were her hardcore P1 fans already knew about her a long time before you and I kind of really went like, okay, I kind of get it now. You know?
Well, and I'm going to elaborate on that a little bit. But for those of you that are listening in United Kingdom or Brazil or all the places that you guys are tuning in, Emo's is our local club that kind of houses pretty much any music that is pushing the boundaries.
Right.
And so it's called Emo's. What do you think its capacity? 500-600 on a good day?
Well, they've got a bigger venue. They've actually moved it now, but you could probably get, I'd say, 1,500 to 2,000 in there now.
But I think,
small.
Yeah, but I think there's a club just like that in London. I'm sure there's a club just like that in Paris or Munich. You know, it's that club that you guys go to when you want to see that cutting-edge band that the booking is willing to take a chance on them.
Before they get big.
Yeah, and one of the things that I can elaborate a little bit about a band that no one was sure what to do with was we had a band called Smashing Pumpkins. And we had them on a baby label called Caroline. And the reason I call it a baby label is because when you really take a step back from a marketing standpoint and look at strategy, you don't really want the hip kids to tune out because it's on a major label.
Right.
So it's almost like it was a baby label. We owned it. We
controlled
it.
Let me just say now, this is during your Virgin era.
This is Virgin Records.
Okay.
So I was with Virgin Records. So it was the album Gish. And it had its own ability to grab on to the bass on its own.
Yeah.
And the Pumpkins were doing a very good job of touring and supporting it on their own. And then, like I said, we as a record company, the minute we saw Gish really get to the point where it's almost gold, and remember we said gold is 500,000 copies.
Right.
We immediately decided that the next album, Siamese Dream,
yeah.
is going to be pushed over to the parent label, Virgin. And then give a much bigger budget for promotion and marketing and distribution. And I remember, again, because this is recorded in Austin, Texas, and my territories were either Michigan, Detroit, or Texas, there was a club here called Liberty Lunch.
Yeah.
And Liberty Lunch.
Where I met my wife at.
Yeah, it was a great place. And is one of those clubs that is long gone because of development, but it was in the core of downtown Austin. And it was actually started as a space between two buildings.
Right.
And then they started putting a metal roof over it.
Yeah.
And then here comes a stage, and here comes a really shitty backstage area.
I mean, it was a real shithole.
It's
still one of my, if not my favorite venue in Austin to this day.
So we sold the Pumpkins out in, I think, 10 minutes, maybe?
Yeah.
1,000 people crammed into that hall, and they put on a blistering rock and roll show.
They did. They always do. I mean, Billy Corgan, you know, I've never met the guy. I'm sure you have several times.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How did you find him personally on a professional level with record label and artist?
You know, he was deep. And I say that because he was hard to really pinned down. He was troubled on his own levels of demons, but yet he could be extremely personable and wonderful. And he went from hair to shaving his head. Yeah. And he was very tall like me. I think he's 6'5". And he was a very intellectual young man that had a lot to say. And yeah. I think he did it quite well. But some of the things he did, I didn't necessarily agree to. We were in Houston and we were playing a show and somebody took off their boot and threw it at him and hit him in the head and pissed him off and he left.
That was it.
But that wasn't fair to the rest of the people. They didn't take off their shoe and throw it at him. It was just this one asshole. You've really got to kind of stop getting so focused on that guy. And remind yourself that all these people that paid money to see you are here to see you. And just because that one guy was a dumbass doesn't mean you should just shut down what you got going, you know, and stop the show. And but the Pumpkins were deep. They were a deep band. So the Pumpkins were one of those bands where they broke kind of like a Billie Eilish.
Right.
Where it was a... Did I fuck it up again?
It's Eilish.
Eilish.
E-I, like eyelash. I dig her. Like eyelash.
Like
but it's Eilish.
Eilish. Yeah. Like delish.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Better calm down, Fred. I don't even think she's 17. Settle down. For the love of God, Fred, she's just a teenager.
So when a band like that breaks and they break from the ground up, we used to call that guerrilla marketing.
Right.
Remember when people would flyer things like flyers?
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
And that's what the whole point of bumper stickers or stickers that we would produce or buttons that we or t-shirts is to get a groundswell going besides the normal channels of media, whether it's radio, print, or whatever.
But now you have to do it on social media, and you have to pay for it to boost it.
Yeah, five-star us. Damn it.
Hey, the one thing about Billy Corgan before we wrap it up today is there was a point that Sharon Osbourne was managing Billy, and I think it's when he was doing his solo stuff. And I don't know if you ever saw this news story or not, but she eventually fired him. She said she couldn't do any more management with Billy due to health reasons. And someone said, well, what was the health reasons? She was like, he was driving me fucking crazy and making me fucking sick.
Well, and I don't know. I'm always so cautious about what I say, but I know that I've suffered severe depression, and so I'll admit that. And he had as well, and I think he's made that public. I think he's done interviews where he's admitted that. And those are things that, unfortunately, you really can't control because if we could, we wouldn't get into it in the first place.
Yeah, totally.
It just kind of comes from nowhere. Well, it comes from somewhere. Something's going on that's bothering you, and then you hit a tipping point, and then it just takes on your mental state of mind.
Right.
But I have to tell you, I spent more time by myself in a limousine at their shows than watching their shows because I was on the road with them so much. And I saw that, and quite frankly, they weren't really my cup of tea.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I should say that or not. I
mean, everybody has their own personal music taste.
I broke 1979 with Tom Pullman, who was the PD at KRBE in Houston.
Yeah.
And they had some beautiful songs.
Right.
That I loved to be a part of. But honestly, I would just sit in the limo, you know, away from the whole crowd and the whole scene until they were done, and I'd go tell them how amazing they were. That was our job. Go tell them how great they are. And they needed that. They would get mad at you if they go, where were you? Where were you after the show?
Yeah.
How come you're not around? It's like, come on, man, really? Together,
I know where they're coming from. You know, I've got a company that syndicates one of my radio shows, and I start getting a little antsy when I don't hear from him, you know, every other day or so. I'm like, hey, man, where you at? I'm still over here.
Need some love.
Come on.
Need some love.
Give me a little bit.
So I don't even know what we're calling this episode. It started with fashion. It got into Billy Corgan and the Pumpkins.
I think we should call it A Tale of Two Billies. Billy Eilish and Billy Corgan. What do you think?
You're a genius. I'm keeping you.
Promotion Man. The true backstories of the most iconic bands in the world told by Fred Myers and interviewed by me, L.A. Lloyd. Get involved and interact on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You'll find the links at promotion-man.com. That's promotion-man.com. Download the weekly Promotion Man podcast on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Play, or your favorite podcast provider. We appreciate you subscribing and spreading the word, and thanks for listening.